will allow you to do your introductions.
Okay, so for those of you that don't know me, my name is Donna Dunn. I'm running for U.S. Congress, as you know, for District 1. I am a lifelong region rat and very proud to be so. I've lived in Northwest Indiana, like I said, my entire life. I served 8 years in the United States Marine Corps. I'm a graduate from Hammond High School. I currently reside in Hessville. And one of the reasons that I'm running for Congress is I'm very passionate about politics. I like to tell people I didn't get into politics. Politics got into me. And I see what's going on in the country, and I want to change it. You know, so many people say, well, what can one person do? What I will do is I will bring a different voice. I will put a different voice on what's going on in Washington and bring a different point of view that's not being heard right now. I don't think that the American people's voice is being heard enough. And that's what I want to take to Washington, D.C. I believe that our biggest assets are our people. And they are the power that fuel the country. And if we put the power back into the hands of the people where it belongs, then our country has nowhere to go but continue to go up. I am a car-carrying union member. I work for the railroad. I will be one of only four union members in the U.S. Congress once elected. Instead of having a Congress that is roughly 40% lawyers, we need some more union members. We need some more, what are quote-unquote, regular people in there. I have a regular job. I like most of the people in the region, I have struggled to pay my mortgage. I have struggled to pay my car payment. I have had to rob Peter to pay Paul. I have had to struggle with, you know, some nights we're going to have, one night we're going to have beans and cornbread. The next night we're going to have cornbreads and beans just to mix it up a little bit. So that's why I'm running. And overwhelmingly, people say that they want money out of politics. And that's what we have to do. We have to take the money out. We have lifelong congressmen and congresswomen that are beholden to their longtime contributors. And if we get that money out of politics, and we need to make our government more accountable to the people. Because the chain of command, as a military person, I am very I love the chain of command, and the one thing we need is the chain of command in as it goes to Washington should be the people to Congress to the president, and not the other way around. The people are the ones who should be making the decisions on what they want and what they need, not me, not anybody in Congress, and so that we need to get those decisions closer to the people. And for me, I have no masters other than my constituents, and that's me in a nutshell.
Thank you very much. The congressman you challenge is an ardent supporter of the South Shore train extension.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you stand on that effort and how it has been handled thus far?
Well, I am opposed to the train effort. I am a railroader by trade. I work in the rail industry. I work for CSX Intermodal right in Chicago. It's a Class 1 railroad. It's one of the biggest railroads in the country. So for me, personally, you would think I would be for the train because I work in the rail industry. But the problem is because if more people are paying into railroad retirement, it's better for me as an individual. Because more people paying into railroad retirement, the more sound that system is. But it's not a good deal for the region. And one of the reasons why is because the trains, passenger service, is not self-sustainable. It always has to have money from the taxpayers. This is something that we will be paying for, that our children will be paying for, and our grandchildren will be paying for. Part of the problem with the train as well is that this should have come up as a referendum to the people, not from the politicians. Again, it goes back to that chain of command I was talking about. It should have come from the people and gone up and not from the politicians and come down. This 9 miles of track is going to be one of the most expensive. It is going to be the most expensive passenger line in the country at $85 million a mile. There's a lot of talk about the economic development that will come with this train. I'm all for economic development. Don't get me wrong, but we have three train stations. We have a train that takes people to Chicago every day, and where's the economic development in Hammond, East Chicago, and Whiting right now? Why don't we have that now? The same consultants that are promising us that were promising us over 80,000 jobs for the airport are now promising us, I believe it was 26,000 jobs. No, I'm sorry, that's the wrong number. They were promising quite a few jobs for the train. Now, these are the same people that promised the airport jobs that never materialized. So now they're promising us all these railroad jobs, and I'm not convinced that they're going to materialize.
That's time on that one, but again, at the end, if you need to circle back to it, we'll give you time to do that.
Okay.
The next question does sort of dovetail off of the same topic. What is, in your mind, the greatest economic development opportunity in Northwest Indiana, and how would you work toward realizing or building upon this strength in the U.S. Congress?
Well, I think one of the best things we have in Northwest Indiana is our people. We have some of the smartest, hardworking people in the country right here in the region. One of the things we could do is, you know, more people work for smaller businesses and work for bigger businesses. And the small mom-and-pop stores are the backbone of our economy. And I believe it always will be. Part of that problem is it takes a significant amount of effort and red tape to start a business. Businesses are you have to have a license in the state to be a private detective. You have to have a license to braid or cut hair. All that business licenses like that do is prevent small companies from starting up. If I was a beautician and I wanted to open a shop in my basement, when I was a kid living in Central Hammond, there was a lady who had a beauty shop in her basement. Now she would be required to have a permit, have health inspections. She wouldn't be able to do it. And she provided a great service to everybody in that neighborhood. So that is one of the things we need to get around. We have our steel mills here. We have lost in the last 30 years, we have lost roughly 40,000 jobs in the steel industry. Those jobs are not going to come back. But we are short-sighting ourselves by relying only on a couple industries in this area. We need to bring more industries to this area. Instead of chasing jobs that are in Chicago, we need to bring those businesses here. And when I mentioned permits and government regulations, just in this state alone this year with the new vaping law that was passed, already mom-and-pop stores have moved to Illinois, and that's the wrong way to be going. And our vaping law was so – I know this is a state issue, but our vaping law was so questionable in the way it was passed and the way the law is written that now the FBI is involved. So we need to get government out of the way and let business – and we can bring businesses back to this area and get businesses to thrive because we have our greatest resource. One of our other big resources is Lake Michigan, and – we could be using that. We could instead of building a convention center in Merrillville where everybody already goes, we want to draw people to a new region. We want to draw people to the lakefront. Why not build a convention center there, draw people there, and allow businesses to thrive around it? Because if you look at places like New Jersey, on the coast of New Jersey, their convention center is surrounded by businesses right there on the lake, and I think that we could develop that even further.
Okay. The state of benefits and medical care for veterans, and I'm sure this one resonates with you, being a veteran yourself.
Yes, it does.
Has been front and center in recent years with harsh criticism for the VA and its administration of services. How would you approach this problem as a congresswoman, and what sort of qualities do you bring to the table to improve the situation?
Well, as you can imagine, the VA is very near and dear to my heart. And I am appalled at the way our veterans are treated. I have to stop myself from getting a little too emotional here, but we have 22 veterans that commit suicide on average every day. In our country, we have a saying in the military, that's unsatisfactory, and we have to stop this. We have veterans who are denied care and then go into the parking lot and take their own lives. What kind of country are we that we allow this to continue? One of my proposals is what I would issue veterans what I would call a vet med card. This card would allow veterans to go to the doctors of their choosing. Now, I'm not saying I want to close down the VA because I don't. But what I'm saying is it's all about choice. We have some veterans who enjoy going to Crown Point, getting on a shuttle, going down to Hines Hospital in Chicago. They enjoy that. They enjoy that camaraderie because that military camaraderie is something you never get again when you get out of the military. So they enjoy that, and I don't want to take that away from them. But I want to give veterans a choice. They should be able to choose to go to what doctor they want to. We have thousands of vets sitting, waiting years, a year or more, to get their claim processed, to get in to see a doctor. I know people myself who have had appointments to the vet. They travel an hour and a half to go to the doctor only to find out, oh, your appointment was canceled. So that is one thing we need to do. And one of the first things I will do when elected is call for a complete congressional investigation into the VA. We have people that have cooked the books so they could get bonuses. That's unacceptable. We have had a leader, the head of the VA, who said, nobody cares if how long you wait in line for at Disney to go get health to wait in line to go on a Disney ride, comparing that to how long vets have to wait to get health care. And our country is going to be is judged on how we treat our veterans, and how we treat our veterans is deplorable. If we can spend billions of dollars sending them over to fight and die in foreign countries and in foreign wars, we can surely spend $1 billion to take care of them when they come home.
How are you going to make sure that private healthcare physicians are going to get paid appropriately? Because currently that's part of the problem for the vouchers that have been available.
Okay.
When they go to private physicians,
mm-hmm.
many of those physicians are backing out of the program because they're not getting paid timely and they're not getting paid appropriately. So if you're in Congress, how are you going to make sure that that is also corrected?
That, again, will fall under the preview of the congressional investigation we have to have. We have to find out why those doctors are not getting paid timely, and dive into the nuts and bolts of the entire system. You know, something, it's broken, and we need to fix it. And one way to fix it, I believe, is we need to get more veterans involved in the two-way communication, because something is wrong along the chain of from point A to point B, from the doctors to the government, from the government to the doctors. So specifically what it is, to be honest with you, I don't know. But how do we fix it is by getting into there, seeing why they're not being paid, what is going on, and what can we do to change that.
Okay. Our region is in the midst of a public health crisis given the East Chicago lead contamination situation. Have local and federal authorities worked urgently enough over the years to deal with this problem? And what would you be doing as a congresswoman to aid in the situation?
Well, this problem came up 30 years ago and has taken 30 years to get to where it is now, and that is entirely too long. We have allowed generations of pregnant women with their children to move into this area, so we have thousands of lead-contaminated adults and teenagers and children in the region, and we have those that have moved away. They may not even know that they have been affected. part of the thing that you have to do is you have to be proactive. When this situation was first identified, you know, looking back, it's easy, hindsight is 20/20. But as a leader, you have to grab the bull by the horns, and that's what needed to happen. There is you have to work with what you have. I mean, part of the problem is the government bureaucracy itself. You have HUD, you have IDEM, you have the EPA, and everybody wants to point fingers at everybody else, but nothing's getting done. And so part of the problem we have now is what do we do now? As you all are well aware, the mayor of East Chicago has determined he's going to tear down the housing projects. We have three zones over there. I've visited over there a couple times already, and I've talked to a lot of people, and people are still confused, they're still scared, and they're reaching out to me to see if I can offer any advice. And all I can do right now is turn them over to the government agencies that are involved. And I have been reaching, made contact with some of the people working the voucher program so I can understand the system better, so I can understand how that works better. As an average citizen, I don't have that knowledge, and I want to get that knowledge so I can help people more. So I've reached out to the people that run the voucher system so I can learn more about it and how it works. One of the things I did learn is that they are taking people from the housing project, and they're moving them into Zone 3. So I'm not really quite sure if that is the best course of action we need to do. But again, housing is limited. So it needs to take leadership. It needs somebody to grab the bull by the horns and run with it and do the right thing for these people and get them out of that area. And we need to also look at how far does this contamination go? Is it further than what the EPA has tested right now? Or Are there more people affected? And if there are, we need to take care of that. We need to remediate this area because we cannot have economic growth in Northwest Indiana if all anybody hears about is contaminated soil. Regardless, people don't understand the geography. They don't understand that East Chicago is just one little town in Northwest Indiana. All they hear is contaminated soil in Northwest Indiana. They don't want to come here. And Indiana right now is number 8 in the nation as far as when it comes to our business climate. So, and I think that is something that we can build on, but we have to fix this issue in Northwest Indiana. And yes, it is going to be expensive, but had we done it 30 years ago, again, I don't think we'd be here today.
How are you going to advocate so that they have the proper funding? One of the problems too with EPA is the fact that they continue to have their funding cut by Congress. And this doesn't give them a pass by any stretch of the imagination, but how are you going to make sure that an agency such as EPA has the proper funding to help remediate sites like this, because there are thousands of them around the country?
I think the states are better able to handle this than the federal government. I think when we get this kind of when we get these kind of issues closer to the people, it's better handled. We have IDEM right here in Indiana, and I think they would do a much better job of handling that than the federal EPA. But as far as getting them more money, we need to make sure that they have the money to fix these programs, first of all. And if we have a business like DuPont or the lead smelting plant, when those businesses are torn down, that should be taken care of as soon as those businesses come down. Again, hindsight is 20/20, but if we have a plant that is polluting our area right now, if that business was to close, we have to do something right then. We can't just say, well, we'll just wait and see what happens. If we take care of the problems as they come up, we can fix them as they come up.
And what does that something look like? If you're going forward, you know, when you have these businesses that are leaving an area and the site is potentially contaminated, what does that look like if you're going to have them act right then?
Well,
how do you enforce it?
Well, that's a very good question. And that is that is something that I am currently learning about. I mean, it's easy for me to sit over here and say, I would do this, I would do that. But learning how to do that is something that, to be honest with you, is I'm still learning. And one of the things that I want to do is you have to be proactive and hold these people and hold the owners' feet to the fire for these companies that are already here. And getting funding for this is not an easy task, as you know. And getting, but again, I think if we put this in the hands of the state as opposed to the federal government, I think that we can do a better job. We spend a big chunk of our money to the government, and the government decides how much we get back. If we keep that in the state, then we would have more money to take care of these issues as they come up.
So you're talking about taxes then?
Could be taxes. It could be we could do some maybe have if we have a dangerous company that's coming into our area, say DuPont wanted to build a plant in East Chicago, then we could have them set up a fund where they would have money in a fund that would be available for when contamination, if contamination were to happen, that money would already be available and earning interest. So if the company became defunct, that money would already be there.
So it's in essence a performance fine?
I'm sorry?
So it's in essence like a performance fine?
Yes.
But you just said a little bit ago that you were against government regulations.
I'm not against government regulations. No, not by a long shot. I'm not against government regulations. We do need some government regulations. But I think, again, the state needs to regulate that, not the federal government.
Aren't you concerned potentially about the variance from state to state to state to state? If you don't have any kind of oversight mm-hmm. there of what those regulations are going to be, if you leave it up to the states, it's going to vary from state.
It probably will, but I look at it this way: we have the states. The EPA has not done a very good job at protecting us right now. So if we keep giving them more and more money and more authority, what are they doing with it? There's a lot of waste there, and if we have, you know, we have a lot things are so much different now than when the EPA was set up, is that you have the people are more in tune, I don't want to say in tune, but with social media and on all those kinds of things, people, the word gets out a lot faster than it used to about different things. So if we can have with government funding, you have to have it's a tough problem, which is why I'm struggling with it. You know, it's not something that we're going to solve overnight. And I'm not saying that tomorrow we should abolish the EPA either. It is something that I think we can phase out over time and turn over to the states. But because we already have, our state environmental laws are a little more restrictive than the federal laws. And I think that's the way it should be. But do we need a federal bureaucracy telling the states that you must do this and you must do that? No, I don't believe so. You know, we have scientists that have decided, you know, this is a safe lead level, this is a safe arsenic level, and then, you know, this state can decide, okay, that's the level that we want to be at. Do we want to be more restrictive? Right now, the states can already do that. They are already doing that. If they decide that they want a lead level at 9,000 parts per billion, that's too high. But when the scientists come out and say, this is an acceptable lead level, this is what is safe, and the government says this is what is safe, then the states have already gone and made that level even more restrictive. And I think if we give this, we should give the states the power, by all means, to make them much more restrictive than what the scientists say that they should be.
If I could ask this question, as a member of Congress, you'd be one of 435 votes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, what I've seen is really the work of a congressman is really done in committees.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the real power, the real influence happens. Which committees would you strive to be placed on? Where do you really want to work to do the most good for Northwest Indiana?
The one committee I want to work on, of course, is the Steel Caucus. I want to be a member of the Economic Development Committee that they have in Congress, and I also want to be a member of the Veterans Committee. We have a lot of veterans in Northwest Indiana, and I think to best serve them, you have to be on that committee, and that's where I want to be for the veterans. But for those who are non-veterans, I believe the Economic Development Committee is the way to go. To bring more economic development to Northwest Indiana and to sell people in Northwest Indiana. You know, when I was a Marine and I would tell people I was from Indiana, Northwest Indiana, well, where's that? Nobody knows where this is. I'd tell them I'm from Chicago and I'd get a much bigger reaction. So I want that same reaction for Northwest Indiana. And I think by being on that Economic Development Committee, I can bring that Northwest Indiana voice to that and make people aware of what we have here, of the people we have here, the resources we have here, the infrastructure we have here. We have rail. We have the highway system. And we have the resources. We have agriculture. We have industry. We have it all right here in Northwest Indiana. And I think we need to make more companies and more businesses aware of what we have here to bring them here.
What's the name of that Economic Development Committee?
It is the name right off the top of my head escapes me.
Okay.
Anyone else? What's your biggest priority day one? Should you be successful in your congressional bid, and why? And then how would you go about tackling it?
My first thing is to insist on a congressional investigation into the VA. As a member of Congress, I believe it's my duty to investigate the VA and find out what's going on over there, to find out why people are not being held accountable. When you have people who are military term is pencil whipping the system, is what we call it, in order to get a higher bonus. Those people need to be prosecuted for fraud because that is exactly what they are committing. If they were in the private sector, they would be in jail, and that's where they belong. So that's the first thing I would do. Another thing I would do is I want to look at Northwest Indiana, and we have this lead problem in East Chicago, and we need to know if we have a bigger lead problem than just in East Chicago. We are a highly industrialized area. A lot of people back in the day, I can remember my mom coming home from the steel mill and blowing her nose, and it was just black coming out of her nose. And now my mom has health issues. Is that tied to the stuff that she inhaled in the steel mill? I don't know. But those are the kind of things that we need to find out. And if we can find those problems, identify those problems, and deal with those problems now, get them remediated and get them fixed, we can bring economic development to Northwest Indiana.
Okay. And in conclusion, anything else that you'd like to wrap up with?
One of the things is, I don't know if I came across, you know, I'm an average person trying to do an extraordinary job. And when, as a Marine, one of the things they tell us when you're a Marine is, if you don't know the answer, then say you don't know the answer. But find out what that answer is. And that's what I'm doing right now with the lead problem, trying to find out what the answer is. I'm not a scientist. I'm not an agriculturalist. So I don't know. But I'm working with people to try and find out. And that's who I am in a nutshell. I am the type of person, if I don't know something, I'm not going to pretend that I do. Because there's no way I could know everything. So you have to surround yourself with people who do know those things. Get the advice from the people. You know, I went on a motorcycle ride a couple months ago with a bunch of steel workers. And so I asked them, how do we save the industry in Northwest Indiana? And they told me the same thing that I know about the industry that I work in, is we have to get rid of the consultants and they have to listen to the people. Because the people that do the work have some of the best ideas on how to solve the problems. The people want their businesses to survive and thrive. Because if their business is making money, they're making money. So that's what we need to do. We need to go to the people. And that's what I do. I want to go, and then when I was a manager on the railroad, that's what I did. I went to the people that had the issues. You know, the people that complain the loudest are the ones you need to go to and say, how do we solve it? Tell me how to solve it, and we will do it. Because, like I said, I'm not going to know everything. There are areas that I have my expertise in the VA, and the veterans, and the railroad, and those kinds of things. Those are my – we all have our little things that we're better at than others. So the things that I may not be proficient in, I will get proficient in. I'm learning about this lead issue. I'm learning. That's why I'm going over to East Chicago to see what it's taking. What are the people saying? How are they feeling? What are their frustrations? What are they having issues with? You know, you have a family over here who's getting a $1,000 voucher, but you have a family over here who's only getting an $800 voucher, and they want to know why. So I'm trying to find those answers why, and I'm trying to find out why that disparity is there. And, of course, it has to do with income and family size, and there's a lot of variables, but there's a big formula that they're using for this. And so I'm learning about that. And that is what I want to do. That's what I want to bring back to Washington is what the people, is what the people feel and the heartbeat of the people. And what they want is what we should be taking to Washington. It can't come back the other way around. It just can't. It's not working. What we've been doing for the last 30 years is not working. And for the last 36 years, half of that time the Republicans have been in power, half of that time the Democrats have been in power. So they've both had equal time to fix what is wrong with our country. Now, our country is great, and I love my country, and I love Northwest Indiana. And I will do whatever I can and whatever it takes to get it rolling on the right track. Are we a little derailed on some issues? Yes, we are. But this is still the greatest country in the world. And I challenge anybody to go to another country and find a better place. I've been to other countries. I've seen the depravity, the poor, and and the famine. I've seen that, and it sticks with you. And it's something that doesn't go away. And so I know this is the greatest country in the world, but I know that there are areas that we can improve. And I just want the chance to do it.
Okay. Great. Thank you.